And joining us now, direct from Animal Planet, Jeff Cohen from the Jeff Cohen Experience, which airs on Sunday nights at 8 to 9 p.m. and also on Thursdays from 9 to 10 on Animal Planet, the great cable station. And, of course, you might remember Jeff from the Going Wild with Jeff Cohen show on the Disney Channel. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
How are you?
Tired. I just got in from Madagascar and just trying to adjust to life below 20 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, it's kind of a shock, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah, how long were you in Africa?
For about 5 weeks.
So wow.
We did a show in Namibia on cheetahs and leopards, and then in Madagascar on chameleons and all the funky lemurs.
I mean, from basically from your bio, you've been involved with animals since you were a kid, and I guess that you have been involved with it. Trying to help endangered ones as well. You went to the rainforest 17 years ago, and what was it that caught your eye about all this kind of stuff, this ecosystem stuff that's going on?
You know, I've just always been engaged by natural history and wildlife, and it's been something of a passion for me and for people in my family for a number of generations have been involved, especially in the bird area. I've always been in the snake and creepy, crawly creature area.
Mm-hmm.
And just always looked for activities that kept me involved, and eventually it was something that developed into a career. And my major interests with regard to animals are creatures like snakes and lizards and reptiles and amphibians and the habitats I just love to explore, and I'm really concerned about our rainforests of the tropics, especially in Central and South America, and the wetlands of New England. In fact, right now I'm at the South Shore Natural Science Center trying to sneak in a meeting where we're building a wetlands museum in Norwell, Massachusetts, called the Eco Zone. So,
cool.
Those are the things that kind of are my passions and that I care about.
And talking about Massachusetts, for all those folks listening in Massachusetts, Bridgewater State College is where you graduated from.
That's right. I went to Bridgewater State College, and I live in Massachusetts, and it's my home when I come back from traveling. And I'm a lot of people, you know, think of the rest of the world as being ecologically profound and exciting with regard to wildlife and animals and stuff, but New England, especially in the area where I live in the South Shore, has extraordinary habitat. We have, you know, it's one of the only places in the world where you can go to walk in a quaking bog or explore a marsh or, you know, have wonderful islands and great wildlife, and unfortunately, its habitat, which is disappearing. As rainforests are disappearing, we're losing wetland habitat here.
We had on a guest yesterday, a woman named La Tigressa, who actually gets her clothes off in front of people who are trying to cut down forests.
Oh, really?
She's an environmental stripteaser.
Good for her.
And I guess it's working out west. She's been working hard at it. But this is interesting stuff, what you do. Obviously, the shows are fascinating. And I have seen so many things here, from you getting peed on by a monkey to rattlesnakes and boa constrictors and cobras. And I mean, you have probably experienced so many things. Have you been bitten? Have you ever been actually damaged by any of these
only
animals?
Once. Like, dangerously, where I almost died, and that was about 6 years ago. I was bit in Central America in Belize by a coral snake and nearly succumbed to the venom, but it was a sloppy error on my behalf. You know, animals bite to protect themselves. Animals bite out of fear, or animals bite to eat something. And
right.
Human beings are off the menu for most creatures. So if you're being bit, it's because you're scaring, spooking, upsetting something.
Now, did you have, anti-venom with you? And
I did not. I had a hike about 5 miles through the jungle to get to a field station where they radioed a helicopter from the British Defense Force, which picked me up out of the jungle and then flew me to a military base and then off to a hospital where I got some anti-venom.
Wow.
Guatemala border. It takes about 4 hours to die from a coral snake, and I got my first round of antivenom about 3 3/4 hours after my bite. So
you were pretty much...
It was a close one.
Almost gone there.
Yeah.
I mean, do you ever say to yourself, well, this is not worth it, this is nuts?
Well, it really was just a stupid thing on my behalf. I was wearing Tevas and carelessly put my foot on top of the snake and got whacked. I mean, that's what they do to protect themselves, and he didn't know me from
Right.
Anything. And, you know, usually I'm really careful with animals. And I took that as a lesson. This was before I started doing the TV stuff, and I said, I'm going to be a little more careful.
How did you
There's
segue?
Risk with everything, but you just have to be careful. At the same time, I love the adventure, and I do love that sense of jeopardy you get from exploring and pushing the edge, just like a, you know, skydiver or cliff climber gets. I get the same thrill when you're seeing something up close like that.
How did you segue into the TV biz?
About in 1994, I had an opportunity to participate with a documentary-styled TV broadcast series called The Jason Project, which is broadcasted in schools and broadcasted for television. And it was produced by EDS, National Geographic, and I was featured in that and really liked the idea of using television as a tool to explore and share information. And I loved the quickness of it. I loved the artistic aspect of it, and it just felt very natural to me. It was a very comfortable fit where I could marry my interest in natural history exploration, and I could, you know, marry my interest of, you know, performance. So it was just really nice mix.
And, of course, that was from the rainforests of Belize.
Right.
And then, of course, you did the jaguar tracks from Costa Rica.
Right.
One of the, I guess one of the things I was going to ask you about is all these locations. It must be just fascinating to be traveling around the world doing this stuff.
It is. I'm a little tired right now, but I've basically been on the road since July, and I've hit from July to now, I've hit about 15 different countries. So I'm a little wiped, but it is great. I mean, you know, I get a paycheck to travel to an awesome place, see its rarest animals, and, you know, oftentimes the countries will do their very best for us to make sure we have access to this stuff. So, like, if you were going to go to Africa on a safari, it would, you know, probably cost you $10,000-$15,000 to go on a decent safari, and you have to stay in the vehicle. I get to get a paycheck to fulfill my dream, and there's no holds bar. I can get off the vehicle and track the rhino or the lion or something like that. So it really is, it's a fantasy. And you have to remind yourself that when you're really tired and you've had enough and you've worked a 15-hour day, you say, this is what you wanted, and you might as well enjoy it, because it doesn't last. Not last in television.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I grew up watching Mutual of Omaha, the Wild Kingdom show. I'm sure you probably did as well.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And seeing Joan Embry on The Tonight Show and some of these other folks who used to visit from the different zoos. Have you connected with any zoos? Are you going to be doing any kind of work like that at all?
You know, the institution that I work with directly is the Social Natural Science Center. I wanted to work with an institution of conservation that touched something that I could be a part of my whole life. And since I live here, I figured I could connect to it very easy. And there are a lot of huge, big organizations out there doing really big stuff. And I just didn't want to get lost. So I felt I wanted to work with a very small project that protected a very important ecosystem that people don't know too much about. So I wanted to have my affiliation in the conservation area be local. And so what we're building now is this EcoZone. We've raised about $150,000 through fundraisers. And today I'm actually just sitting down putting together the blueprints. I'm designing this thing with
wow.
my colleagues. And so, yeah, but I wanted to do it locally. And because I just feel sometimes people forget. I think it's very important to worry about what's happening in other parts of the world. For example, Madagascar has only 5%, maybe at most 10% in some areas, of its original habitat, which is catastrophic. With that said, we have issues of serious conservation in our own neck of the woods. I don't know, where are you from?
I'm from Stoughton.
Stoughton, well, you know, there's places right in your own backyard that need conservation and protection. We sometimes forget that when we look at the big picture.
Well, we're working on, in town here, I know we have the bird sanctuary, and we have some of the lands we've just bought recently to preserve so they won't get developed. And I think that all towns have to start doing that.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, something people should take a look at is they have these scales where they show what if your town continues to grow at the present rate in population, this is what it's going to look like in 5 or 10 years from now. And it's shocking. It's without appropriate and proper management to see how the historical perspective and the natural history and the ecology can be marred by poor planning.
Well, what happened here is that we just had to change our zoning laws, but we had over 500 permits pulled in like a year and a half for building. It's way, way too much.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, these are things that are happening in our area of the woods that we forget about. So,
You know, you meet so many animals when you're on the road and in the different countries. Have you connected with any of them personally? Were you really kind of missed them when you left?
Oh, a lot of the animals. When you come, what really gets you is, I mean, you'll see every once in a while you work with a primate, like an orangutan or something, and you clearly see something more there. You're not just looking at a furry face, you're looking at something that's thinking, and it makes you question your own being. You say, what is it to be a human, or what does it mean to be a person or a people when you see something here that has a sense of society and who fears and feels and has all the feelings that you do. And you say, well, what is it, why is this thing any more, or why am I any less animal, you know, and you think stuff like that. But what really gets me is when you see something and you think, my gosh, there's only 300 of these left in the world. Like in Thailand, we worked with these little bats. There's only 300 of these bats left. And I thought, my gosh. It's just the probability of them becoming extinct is so great.
Just the thing, most people don't care about a bat, though. That's not, you know.
Yeah, but bats are so important.
So people are afraid of bats. They have a bad reputation.
Which is should be their least fear. I mean, no one ever is killed by a bat. I mean, no one ever really gets bit by bats unless if they're handling them or something like that. Bats don't, you know, it's so many wives' tales about them. They don't fly in your hair or do any of those things. But yet bats are responsible for eating pests, insect pests. 50% of tropical rainforest plants and fruits are pollinated and the seeds dispersed by fruit-eating bats. I mean, bats are extraordinarily important to keeping ecosystems whole, and they're a very important bridge in the natural history of many living communities. So, you know, bats are very vital. And especially here in New England.
Don't you find, though, that, you know, if something's cute and cuddly like those, you know, white seals or something that that people can actually look at and think is real cute, that they're much more, you know, involved in trying to save them than if it's an insect or something else?
Sure, and that's a big problem with, you know, being people. It's, we can be really anthropomorphic and give human-like qualities to animals, and maybe that can misjudge us to protect a species that needs to be protection, but will cause us to neglect another. Absolutely. There are animals out there that are in danger that people don't care about because they don't identify with them. It doesn't make them any less important than any other creature out there. It's every living thing has its natural place in the world of creatures and survival and natural history. And it's our responsibility as stewards to conserve these organisms, especially if their endangered status is a result of our behavior.
Which it usually is.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah. The rainforest, I assume that you've been going there for about 17 years. How much have they changed since you first went there?
Dramatically. I mean, every hour, 3,000 acres of rainforest is destroyed, or felled. And that's equivalent to a mass of trees, plants, and animals the size of England, the United Kingdom, scraped off our earth every year. So how they've changed is that since I've started working in rainforests, there's a lot less of them, and it's a great loss.
Are they doing anything to replant them or to get it going again? Or
you can't remake a rainforest, unfortunately, because it's such a complex ecosystem. You know, on 1 acre of rainforest, you can find more species of plants and animals than you can in the entire United States on 1 acre. Has more diversity than the country, than our nation.
Wow.
So how do you remake that? You don't. Once it's gone, it's gone. I mean, there are some reforestation projects, but I think it's the preventative. And to prevent the destruction of these ecosystems requires more than just protecting them in a national park. We've discovered that doesn't work very well because you have to recognize the needs of the people that are exploiting these resources. They need jobs. They need to be somehow connected to the conservation of this ecosystem through some sort of sustainability. And that's a great, great challenge. How do you tell someone who's starving, who's impoverished, that they need to care about the natural resources and the ecosystems around them? You have to connect them to it some way. And what gives you the right to tell them that when you have such privilege and comfort in your life? So these are tough tightropes to walk, but the conservation of rainforest will come through sustainability and through recognizing the needs not only of the ecosystem, but of the people that use that ecosystem.
I know we had Bobby Kennedy Jr. on here, who's very involved in the rainforest, and he was talking to us about trying to get people to buy products that are made from the people in the rainforest to try to give them a cash inflow to try to prevent
right.
them from selling out all these other things. But
right.
it would take it takes a gigantic involvement of people, and it doesn't seem like anybody cares.
Well, people do care, and there are a lot of organizations involved, and some countries are starting to care and are developing programs to conserve their rainforest and their animals. But with that said, some of these countries are very, very poor, and the difference between the haves and the have-nots in these countries, okay, those differences are extreme. So, you know, we often look at the perspective of conservation through our eyes, but the truth is that the resources are not only concerns for us, but it also belongs to those people who live there, and you know, we have to look at it through their eyes. And people do care, but oftentimes people put things in their own perspective. So, you know, we have to work through their institutions and assist them if they want it. But in the end, true, it's a global issue, but it will only be genuinely conserved if it's done locally.
Talking with Jeff Cohen from the Jeff Cohen Experience on Animal Planet. You know, I've asked this about humans many times when I'll talk to an actor and ask them who their favorite actor was, who their least favorite actor was. In terms of the animals that you've met, your favorite, you mentioned the orangutan. Some of your favorites that you've had. Also, did you meet animals that really had lousy personalities and they were really difficult to get along with?
Well, every once in a while, well, you know, something that I almost stepped on a cheetah the other day. I was walking. We were in a rehab facility, and the cheetah was hiding behind a bush, and there was a cheetah to my left, and I avoided that one and literally almost walked on this cheetah, and he pounced up, and lucky nothing happened from it, but, you know, you just thought, man, if had that been any differently, I would have had 5 cheetah claws in my legs. But, you know, I really marvel at all animals. And really can find something interesting about any creature I work with. With that said, I think, in all honesty, the animals that I feel least comfortable with are probably primates, like baboons and macaques. And these animals, especially if they've been exposed to people, sometimes we go to areas in the world, like in Southeast Asia, where like you'll have wild monkey populations, which are living off the refuse of human beings. They're abused by people. They're fed, which you should never feed wild animals as a private person. And these animals have no fear, and that's a bad thing. Animals should fear what they regard as a predator when they look at you and they think, you're nothing. I can manipulate you and use you. That can become dangerous.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. We're talking with Jeff Cohen from the Jeff Cohen Experience. Just a reminder that you can watch the show on Animal Planet Sundays from 8 to 9 p.m. and Thursdays from 9 to 10 p.m. And Jeff, welcome back home and enjoy your work, and we'll watch you on TV.
Great. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.